This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This is something really scary.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain, from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-mate, no rain.
Dude, I had the show set up from overtime this past Monday. We did overtime for the Patreon, and that's the overtime intro that I had started with. And then like halfway through, I was like, why do I hear Bray? I was like, oh yeah, that's the overtime intro. So you guys got a little bit of a taste of our overtime intro. My bad, everybody. My bad, Rich. I can hear Rich yelling at me, bro. Get the plug in there, dude. Come on now.
First thing I thought of was when I came, like, up, oh, Rich is going to be pissed at us again.
Yeah, I was like, damn it, we're in trouble with Rich again. Welcome to the Mike and JD Show. I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I'm all right, man. Solid. I read a book this week that I absolutely loved that I told you I was going to sell you on the show. So
let's hear it.
I'm a comic book guy, right? Love comics, have since I was a kid, but I kind of fall in and out of the hobby. Right. Sometimes I'm reading a bunch. Sometimes I'll go a couple years without reading any of them when I get tired of it. So DC I'm a DC kid at heart. Superman, Batman, that's that universe. So they had a series come out this summer called Absolute Power that I absolutely adored. It was great. Mark Waid back with DC. So they end this whole thing with their universe is kind of being splintered off, right? So they're starting a brand new universe in DC that everything can kind of start from issue one. So everyone kind of getting on the ground floor, but they're kind of reinventing who these heroes are. So of course they launch with Absolute Batman number one. And this is a completely different Batman than anything you might've thought of. First of all, he is on this version of Batman is on all the steroids. Okay. He is a mountain of a man. And they don't say he's on steroids in the book, but if you were to look at him, you'd be like, this man looks like Brian Cage at 6'6".
Yeah. Yoked Batman.
Yes, exactly. Sean Tragedy knows stuff. This is the most yoked Batman I've ever seen. He also has the most overly yoked bat symbol you've ever seen. So this is a universe that is tainted, right? If you're into the comic lore, it's a universe that is influenced by Darkseid. That doesn't mean a damn thing if you read this book. So in this universe, Batman is not rich. He's just a guy. Bruce Wayne, his father was a teacher. And they were on a school trip to the zoo, and there was essentially a school shooting. Thomas Wayne saved all these kids and died.
Well, at least he still dies. Like, I don't want to go too far from the story. Yeah.
He still dies, and Batman is an orphan, kind of. He's raised in kind of an orphanage, it sounds like, with a bunch of his villains, right? With Killer Croc, they mentioned specifically in this, Penguin, Riddler, Catwoman. So those are like his childhood friends. And now there is a gang in Gotham City called the Party Animals. Something is up with these guys. We don't know what, but they're remarkably violent and they're killing people all over the place for fun and no one can do a thing. Mayor Jim Gordon has tried to stop them. He has failed. This is a failure until there is a problem and Batman shows up and beats the ever living shit out of these gangbangers. His ridiculous bat symbol turns out is an axe. He literally pulls an axe out of his chest and doesn't kill anyone, but he chops a lot of body parts up. And the whole time, Batman is being monitored by an assassin. and the assassin is supposed to take out this Batman, and he doesn't, and we find out the assassin's name is Alfred Pennyworth.
Oh, the butler.
The butler in the regular universe is a murderer, is an assassin in this one. And then we find out at the end of the book that Bruce Wayne's mother is actually still alive, and she's a social worker. And that's his weakness, as they say. And the book ends when you meet the overarching villain of the story, a man who takes things so seriously, a man who never smiles, a man who never laughs at anything, a man who cannot take a joke. And behind his back, his subordinates call him the Joker.
Well, we got a whole new Batman universe coming out with DC. Now, is Swerve Strickland in this comic? Because I heard that he's in some of these now.
It's possible. He hasn't shown up quite yet, but it is possible. Tony Storm did show up in some comic this week that I did not read. Absolute Wonder Woman comes out next week, and then Absolute Superman comes out shortly after that. It's a reinvention of these superheroes. It's offshoot of the regular universe, and I honestly, it's probably my favorite book I read this year. It's so damn good. I loved it.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
I highly recommend that.
You know, that's pretty exciting because I think we've had so many twists and turns on Batman over the years, and it's kind of like all in the same like lore. Even like the new Amazon Prime show that they did, where they tried to make the villains more diverse. Like that was their whole thing. Like Penguin's a woman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like Harley Quinn is not from New York, doesn't have a New York accent. I believe she's an Asian lawyer.
Asian lawyer.
Doctor. So like they just tried to like kind of like do that whole thing, you know what I mean? And you know, Amazon likes that stuff. So but this, it's like they're kind of blowing everything up a little bit and just trying to make it the whole new deal.
It's starting from scratch. Batman's in his 20s, right? He's a kid and he's just very, very angry. Right. And I like that. It's a different vibe to the universe. It's a more dangerous universe. And I highly recommend it. if you are interested in reading comics and you don't know where to start, this is a great jumping on point because you don't know shit. There's no continuity. You can just jump right in. If you are looking to get back into comics, I highly recommend that. If you like comics, as it is, our buddy Josiah messaged us about this and he was a fan of it. And I had the book and I waited about a week to read it. And I'm really glad that I did. It was freaking awesome, man. I loved it. It's going to be part of my collection from here on out. Can't wait to keep reading it. Highly recommend Absolute Batman.
That's cool, man. So I, you know, it's October. And every October, there's two things that I like to do. I like to go back and try to watch some horror movies that, A, I have not ever seen before, or that I have not seen in forever, right? And so I've been watching some of those. And I like to go back and watch Halloween Havocs. So I've watched Halloween Havoc 89, 90. And then, of course, because I had my column come out earlier this week, my Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, 30 years later column that I did. And I did a ton of research for that thing. So you fuckers, please go read it and tell me what you think. But that one was a long one that I did because I kind of went through, you know, we did a podcast about it for overtime earlier this week, but we didn't really go into a ton of detail about it. It was more just us giving our opinion of what Hogan was up to and what Flair was up to in 94 and all that stuff. And like an overview of what happened, but I actually went into the detail. I read the 1994 observers, went through those, combed through those, got all the statistical and data on there. And I put it all in the article. So please go check that out. But yeah, I watched a few Halloween Havocs. And then of course I decided that I'm going to get back into some horror movies. And I watched Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, It Chapter 2, the newest one.
What did you think of It Chapter 2?
I thought the first It, like of the first remake with the kids, I thought that one was better.
I agree.
I still liked this one.
I agree.
But I just found like the villain, you know, Pennywise is the villain in it, but they never really confront him until like the end. You know what I mean? It's like he's just like a figment of their imagination. And that was just kind of like, it's like, guys, just snap out of it. I just kept saying that, just fucking snap out of it. Like, he's not there. Like, you know, he's not there. So I kind of had that battle, but by the end of the movie, I was like hooked and I thought it was a really good movie.
So that's the source material, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the book bobs and weaves in and out of the kid and adult stuff. Yes. Both of the movies do it differently. They do all the kid stuff and they do all the adult stuff, but the actual book kind of bobs and weaves. So it's my favorite horror book, even though it has that one scene in it that's really weird.
Yeah. So but yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I started there's a trilogy on Netflix called oh God, I think it's called Fear Street. So I'm watching Fear Street 1994 right now. It looks like it's kind of a play on Scream, but they have 1994, 1978, and 1966, I think. So they did a trilogy movie set in different eras in the same town being haunted by the same witch. So, I'm starting with 1994. That's the first movie. I'll try to finish that one tonight. I'll report back next week if I like those. Evil Dead 1. Here's my synopsis of Evil Dead 1. Okay, because I had not seen Evil Dead since I'm a teenager.
Oh, okay, go for it. I'm curious.
I had not seen the original Evil Dead since I'm like a teenager. And I kind of just saw it in passing. It wasn't really... I enjoy the movie. I really like the movie. Don't get me wrong. But it was kind of a bad movie, but it was so bad it was awesome. You know what I mean? And I think that's part of the charm. I felt like in Evil Dead 2, they purposely tried to make a bad movie to capture the charm of the first movie. And what they ended up doing was just ended up with a bad movie.
Oh, you don't like Evil Dead 2?
I don't like Evil Dead 2. I did not like it. Army of Darkness, I loved, though. I thought they went full budget on Army of Darkness. I thought Bruce Campbell was hilarious. I thought I really liked the story. I liked everything about Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness rules. I got to show that to my kid. This is one of his first like horror movies I let him see. Dude, push the Brace for Debate button.
I don't have the Brace for Debate button anymore. Man. Sorry.
Brace for Debate. Ding, ding, ding. So I love Evil Dead 2. I think Evil Dead 2 is what you do when you don't have... Because Evil Dead 1, they're like trying to make a movie. Right?
They're trying to make a good movie. It just turns out like... But it's bad. But because like they were trying to make it good, and it was so bad, it ended up being good, which is weird.
Yeah. But then here's the thing. It's Evil Dead 2, they steer into the skid, right? And they start making... I think it's a good movie because they realize they can steer into comedy a little bit more because they're all really good at comedy. And then there's part... Like, I love the scene where Bruce Campbell's by himself playing off the puppetry, right? And he's just kind of going crazy. It's actually one of my favorite scenes in a horror movie of all time. I love Evil Dead 2. I think it fulfills the promise of what Evil Dead 1 should have been while giving us the cliffhanger that would be Army of Darkness. That's shocking to me.
Yeah, I just after a while I got annoyed with it. To be honest with you, I did, and I'm a Bruce Campbell fan. Like, look, you're not gonna get me to say a bad word about Briscoe County Jr. Like,
oh, what a show!
Yeah, he ruled. Actually, I need to do a rewatch of that one coming up here soon.
Oh, Patreon.
Yeah, I'm on paternity leave, so I just need more shit to watch. So
we should do a Briscoe County Jr. thing for the Patreon. I don't know if anybody would want to do that besides you and I. So
nobody's gonna listen to that anyway. No. Sean Tragedy provides some context. Fear Street is R.L. Stein. That is true. Fear Street is R.L. Stein, but it's more adultish than Goosebumps, clearly. So I think the movies are rated R. So I picked it up, and then I was like, you know what, I don't have it in me tonight. I can't do another movie, so I just shut the iPad off and went to sleep. So, because I'm sleeping in the nursery. Wife has got both kids in the master bedroom. Dad's been kicked out to the nursery. Because all the son, like, I'll be honest, all this kid does is sleep, eat, poop, and think about boobs all day. He's a real legend, if you ask me. But I have nothing that he wants. So I've been relegated to sleeping in the nursery with my computer and my iPad.
Yeah, you don't start bonding with the kid until he's like 3-4 months old, right? That's when you get to start spending some quality time with him. Like, these first few months is just survival, him and the mom, and it's you're just kind of there. You're just there to help clean some diapers and provide moral support and be like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of I'm cooking like a lot of the meals. I made dinner tonight. I made dinner last night. I'm doing all that stuff, just trying to be as helpful as possible. But for the most part, I'm totally useless. So I'm just playing and watching Halloween Havocs and watching horror movies. I also watched AEW Dynamite, man. So the title, the headline of the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up. I would greatly appreciate it. Also, make sure that you're a subscriber, regardless of which channel you're on. If you're on Voices of Wrestling or if you're on the Mike and JD Show, please do that and head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And plop down $5 to get a lot of more of this content. We would greatly appreciate it. So the original headline of the show was AEW enters its NWO era. But I've been trying to get a hold of Ibu from Wrestle Purists. I got a hold of him today, and he has agreed to come on to the show. If he did not come on to the show, I was just going to regurgitate all his scoops from his show earlier this week. But instead, I'm going to actually let him speak to some of those scoops. And then, of course, if you guys are in the chat and he's on, you guys can you guys can throw some questions his way, too. He said he could probably give me like 30 minutes. But he's trying to get off work and get home and get settled in. So we're looking at possibly towards the end of the show. So if he does come too late, then I'm going to let JD off the hook. JD's got an early wake up call in the morning and it's already late where he's at. And it'll just be me and Ibu shooting the shit right here on the Mike and JD show. So stay tuned for that.
Mike and Ibu show.
Yeah. Mike and Ibu show. I kind of like that. AEW last night, I thought they were, this was kind of like almost a reset for the company. I thought Wrestle Dream was a bit of a reset. Dynamite was, you know, them trying to tell the story of what the TV show is going to look like going forward and kind of planted the seeds for the top storylines through the end of the year. And I thought they did a really good job for the most part. And the title, the original title is AEW Enters Its NWO Era. And the NWO, the BCC, kind of doing reminiscent of 1996 Hall Nash and Hulk Hogan, man, with the way they're attacking the entire AEW roster.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably my favorite episode of Dynamite in a long time, to be honest with you. I've raved about how much I like the Moxley character right now. I thought a lot of the online speculation that someone is manipulating Moxley has kind of been put to bed, which is good. Nobody should ever have to manipulate John Moxley, right? I love this. I love the end of Wrestle Dream. I thought the whole thing was great. I thought this was really good. It was like a soft reboot to Dynamite. It felt like a new era. It felt a little bit more dangerous. It felt a little bit more interesting. Like, I like what the BCC is right now. I liked the NWO, but they're wearing white shirts, right? Except for Pac, who doesn't wear clothes. Like, they're like, it's not about branding, you know, which I kind of dig. Like, and I think Moxley's got very interesting motivations as a heel. Like, he's like, the company has lost the way, we have to baptize this place in fire, we have to purify it. And I'm like, that's a cool villain. That's a cool villain trope. Like, it's not original, but it's kind of like Ra's al Ghul. I'm in my Batman mood, right? Ra's al Ghul is an eco-terrorist. He is going to save the planet by eliminating people, right? It's kind of where John Moxley is right now. And if you've watched AEW for last year, you can kind of go, yeah, I get where you're coming from. Wipe this whole thing out and start from scratch.
Yeah. What do you say to the argument that it's not a good idea to have your top star going around telling everybody that the company sucks?
I hear that. And I can understand that. At the same time, that's what the NWO did.
Yeah.
And that was a very successful storyline. The problem is you can't go to it too much. And the problem with the NWO storyline is that they never established that WCW was good. If the end result here is to establish that, no, AEW has been saved and is in a better place, then it works. If the idea is AEW sucks and will continue to suck, then you're in problems. Like, I think it all depends. I mean, he's the heel. Like, he is this top star, but he's a villain. We're not supposed to think that he's right. The problem with the NWO storyline is they were right and they never got proven wrong, right? So I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like, your villains here, and I hate this, like, if it's John Cena saying WWE sucks, you know, that's a problem. But like, him, like, CM Punk's whole thing was saying WWF sucked and it turned him into a huge baby face, right?
yeah. So I mean, like, and he was right at the time.
He was right. But that's the thing, though, is like, this stuff can work. It can be pulled off if there's an idea and if there's a storyline going through to it. I saw someone say that, you know, I heard RJ City's running this whole thing. And someone
that was
said,
Ibu, by the way.
It was Ibu said that. Okay. Yeah. I'm way out. I haven't been on Twitter in forever. I also heard, I was on Reddit today when I saw someone say that RJ City is clearly influenced by Heat with this storyline. You know, of Heat, right, Mike? The Michael Mann film, Pacino, yes. De Niro. Yeah, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't see it at all right now. Yeah.
The Dark Knight, yeah, Heat.
The Dark Knight, exactly. Dark Knight is 100% a Heat remake. Batman again.
Which is also why I love it.
It's a great movie, man. A great remake of a great movie.
Yeah.
I don't see that right now because I don't see who Pacino is, right? I don't see who it could be Darby, but right now we're not there yet. Right now it feels to me like I agree with this. Someone in the chat said it's actually more like the new blood versus Millionaires Club. No, that's stupid. That's not true.
No.
This has definitely more NWO vibes to it. And I think this might fulfill the promise of Darby becoming Sting.
I think so, because if you listen closely, I don't think Excalibur is very good at his job, to be quite honest. I've never been a fan.
There was a time but, I would have argued with you, but I've come to your line of thinking and you are correct.
I think the AEW announce crew is too busy popping each other, right? Especially if you like say you missed it last night because you're watching horror movies and baseball instead of Dynamite, which is what I did last night. But I got up this morning and I just went on the internet and I found a link to watch the show out of my garage on my iPad while I worked out and I did some cleaning and stuff like that. I had my headphones in, so I was able to catch. And so like on some of the commercial breaks, it's just Nigel and Excalibur and Tony Schiavone like trying to make each other laugh. But anyway, at one point he said, Darby has been nowhere to be found since what happened. Nobody can get a hold of him. Nobody knows what's going on with Darby. So they left that mystery out there. The mystery of Darby, is Sting, right? Like he is slowly transforming into Sting, which is like you said, fulfilling the prophecy. I can absolutely see that. I like what I do. The BCC, I think is great. I think Moxley is doing the best work of his career. I think he's probably in the best shape of his career.
That's like great.
The guy looks great. And I think that had he done it with his soft body that he had like last year, might not have been as effective, you know, but he's coming out there with his fucking muscles. It's like, okay, now he looks a bit more badass. And sorry, I know that's body shaming, but I don't give a fuck. Like people with muscles tend to be more scary on television. The way it goes.
We're talking about pro wrestlers here, man. Like
the body
is part of it. And I think that's what I like about this too, is I think Moxley's got a different look.
Yeah.
Right. He's shaving his head now. He doesn't look like the same guy who was the AEW champion three other times before this. Right. There's a different vibe to him going right now. And I think the reset's been good for him. Like this is, I think this is his Hollywood Hogan era. Like this is intriguing to me. And I think that just because it's NWO influenced doesn't mean it's a bad thing, because the NWO was UWF influenced.
Yeah. Everything's influenced by something else, right? So you just take old ideas and you just kind of turn them into your own. That's just the way pro wrestling is.
Well, it's not just pro wrestling, but all art. And here, I love this one. I forget who says this. All art is either an influence of or a rejection to whatever came before it.
Yeah.
Right. So Dadaism is a reaction to realism. Right. Surrealism, same thing. Like modernism is a reaction to Dadaism because they got tired of the weird and went back to what's super regular. You know what I'm saying? Like, and pop art is a rejection of that. So all art kind of moves like that. And like, that's kind of what wrestling is too. It's like, we're going to take this, the kernel of the invasion storyline. Right. And we're going to grow on it. So, I mean, and I like what it has to say. I like that because you can't, I don't think you should say, I think you're lying to your audience if you tell AEW fans that everything is great and nothing's better. I mean, like, it's not the company it was 5 years ago. A lot of those good vibes are gone. So why lie? Why not rebuild? Right? Why not try to do something different? I don't hate it at all. You say, well, perception is reality. Well, perception is reality. There isn't good perception right now. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to continue lying about it, or are you going to do something about it? I like doing something about it.
Yeah, and I like that the heel is like you were saying, if it were the babyface saying that the company sucks, then it probably wouldn't work. But in the WWF, I've been watching a lot of old shit. The WWE, it worked to CM Punk as the babyface saying the WWE sucked because Vince McMahon and Triple H were heels on television.
CM Punk wasn't the heel or wasn't the babyface at the start of that. Remember, he was feuding with John Cena. He was supposed to be the heel, but everybody went, he's right.
He's right. And it turned him babyface and he came back was a real babyface like after that. But it also helped his cause that Triple H and Vince McMahon had been heels for so long on television. Now they're like total babyfaces on TV. And that's kind of part of their appeal. But I really enjoyed what they did last night. I think the only problem I have so far, like they killed Danielson, and the only people coming out as far as baby faces go to fight them are like mid-carders and like lower end guys. Right. And that just shows you kind of how weak the baby face side of the house is in AEW. 'Cause Will Ospreay is not coming out to fight those guys. He's worried about Kyle Fletcher. Right. He's got his own other thing. So we get, you know, Daniel Garcia, who's great, obviously, but not a top guy. We get Orange Cassidy, you know, lower mid, you know, mid card, can be upper mid card guy. Private Party, okay, top flight. I'm trying to think of a like an actual top guy babyface. You know, Darby didn't come out because Darby's doing his own thing, but they don't have Lex Luger and Randy Savage in this company.
Yeah, but Randy Savage is taken out, right? So I mean, it was just Lex Luger. Like the NWO, you look back on those old W shows, they're beating up mid carders.
Yeah, but right? They had no top babyfaces to fight against. I'm sorry, talking about BCC has no top babyfaces to fight against right now.
I mean, like Luger. I guess you can make the argument for Luger because Savage disappears very quickly into that and everything. And they start feuding with the Horsemen. And the Horsemen have always been like pseudo heels.
Right. But they turned babyface during the NWO thing. And that's, I thought that was
not right away. Not right away. Like we're 1 week into this thing. Like I think we need to still, they're still in the establishing period of what this really is right now. And like, I don't want, Ospreay is doing his own thing right now. Like,
he loves the company though, and John Moxley is saying if anybody that works for this company doesn't like what we're doing, we're here. Moxley or so Ospreay doesn't care.
Oh, well, Ospreay's got his own problems, Tori Bar. Now he's got Don Callis's whole crew that wants to kill him as well. Yeah, like yeah. you got to take care of your own house before you start worrying about what your neighbors are doing.
That's well, I mean, AEW is his house. I'm also applying logic to an illogical situation, obviously. But
devil's advocate. I mean, I guess I hear what you're saying, but I mean, like if he wasn't involved in anything, I'd be like, okay, sure. But I mean, like he does have his own problems going on with the other major heel group going on right now. So, and I think we're setting up the Elite to do something.
Oh so, man. So that was my next topic. The Elite are a bunch of cuckolds. Like they were the top heels in the company and they just sat there looking like geeks while the BCC looks so fucking cool and badass. And you got the Jackson boys, silly asses, with their hair dye and their stupid outfits. And you got Okada out there, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, who's a one-note joke in the company right now, looking like geeks, standing there watching the BCC look like the baddest motherfuckers on the planet. It was weird, but it also was like, yeah, you guys just got alpha'd for your top heel spot. Get the fuck out.
I think that was by design.
Probably, but I'm looking at him like you guys didn't get over. Get the fuck out. Get off my TV, dipshits.
So I find this interesting because like earlier in the show, they mentioned Kenny Omega's birthday, and so AEW social media is steering to Kenny Omega stuff. So I can't help but wonder if Kenny's getting close to a comeback. I can't help. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where he's at right now. But
I think Ibushi said as much, and like they're already teasing January 4th, Tanahashi and Omega versus the Bucks.
Well, I mean, like which would be awesome. Well, I mean, like Kota Ibushi says a lot of things.
He does. Yeah.
You can't take Kota at his word. So like, I do can't help but wonder kind of where this is going with Kenny Omega, where he fits in. I mean, because isn't it time to emasculate the Elite? Haven't they proven themselves to be not good as the top heels? I mean, I think that was an important moment in the show where Moxley said, you guys are done. And we saw that, like we saw that plain as day. Yeah. Even though those guys have four belts, they were completely, I like how you call them cucks, like they were completely emasculated by the BCC, which was
great. They got Miro'd right on television, right? Like, which is funny because Bobby Lashley's down in the company.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Damian Priest is in the other company. Life can imitate art.
Yeah, it does. It does. Here, let's go to the chat. And then we got a bunch of more topics and we're actually just shooting the shit and we're hoping that, let me check my Twitter. Okay. We're hoping that Ibu is going to join us here in a little bit. If not, Ibu doesn't join us. I hope you guys still click the like and subscribe button anyway. Let's see. Transferring Heat says three invasion group angles in one calendar year is a choice. This is the only invasion one that I've seen.
What else was invaded?
I don't know.
It's not really an invasion. These guys have all worked for AEW for years.
Right. Yeah. They kind of just work there. Now, if it was like outsiders coming in, but I don't see this. Yeah, you're right. It's not an invasion.
Right. No one's leaving or coming or going. Like, so.
Right. They're just trying to cleanse the company from within.
Right.
Because it's rotten to the core. Speaking of rotten to the core. Hey guys, given how Jimmy Jacobs recently left AEW, do you think Tony Khan listens to Voices of Wrestling? I think that's a great question.
I think if you heard our Patreon this week, if you heard our overtime this week, I talked about my magical powers and my will of influence, because I went on a tirade about why Jimmy Jacobs should be fired on this show a week ago, and the next day it happened. So I need $10 million, and I'm throwing that into the ether to see if I can repeat this. It had to happen, man. It had to happen.
Does he listen to the flagship? I think so. I think he does. In fact, I think him and Joe Lanza have been kind of like friendly. I wouldn't say they're like friends, but I'm sure they. I know Joe's like openly spoke about times that he's had, you know, sent messages back and forth to Tony. So I do think that he's aware of the show at least.
We have a mutual friend who's told us that there are people in that company who do listen to our show, which is kind of cool. I have not had that confirmed, but I have heard that there are people there who listen to us, which is, you know, kind of neat. But
I think enough time has passed. We can go ahead and say this now. We did get it confirmed from a close friend of ours that one John Moxley actually watched our show at least one time, because he sent the show over to him and said, hey, look, these guys are spot on. And we've never really said that publicly until just now. So
I wasn't gonna say it, but you did. I mean, like it was one of my tirades, and he's like,
yeah. Enough time has passed. I'm not going to say who he sent it to and who sent it to us, but that was very nice. So I do know that people in AEW have definitely crossed our show, and I know the flagship specifically.
Well, the flagship is one of the most. The flagship's, and I'm not just saying this because they're our bosses, but the flagship is probably the most important independent professional wrestling podcast in the game. Like it really is.
Yeah.
You know, so people listen.
Well, they provide actual opinions and constructive criticism, and that's kind of what we like to do here. We're just kind of like you know, JV League flagship is what we do. All right. Let's see. Io says, I do see Darby. I think he means eventually winning the big one. Yeah, so do I.
I think so too. I think this is, I do. I think they're going to do Hogan's Sting, but they're going to do it right because they saw what happened. I think Tony would like to stick a Derek Bischoff into a better version. I don't know if that's going to be reality, but I think that's where the story ends. And I want to kick him. I don't want that to happen for another 6 months down. Like, do that at like All In or something like that. Like, I just don't want it to happen now.
DJ Premier BZ says the BBC suck. Hey, sir, put that in your Google that and see what happens to your Google if you put in the BBC suck. That might
destroy your algorithm for the rest of time.
Yeah, I mean, I do know like some of their shows, like Planet Earth, you know, from BBC in the UK, is a pretty good show. I think.
Yeah, BBC in the UK. See, Google that. See what you come up with there.
Yeah. No pad, no pencil says this angle is going to get AEW back to its roots with long-term booking. I think so, and I think that's been kind of the word around the company is right now is that they're a bit more organized, and that this show that they had last night had been already written out for a couple of days, which is something that hasn't happened in a while. They've been changing it up into like last minute, but this show had already been written and approved and organized way ahead of time. So I think we might kind of like be on the right track. One of the things that Ibu said on his podcast, and we're going to hopefully get a chance to talk to him tonight, said that Jimmy Jacobs left and they just promoted somebody from within. He wouldn't reveal who that was. That right now things are kind of like everybody's on the same page, going in the right direction. So hopefully things get better from here. Who knows?
I think you and I both know who that is, who got promoted. I don't want to say nothing. I don't want to speculate. Yeah. We've had some conversations with some friends, and I think if you're listening to this show, you could probably figure out who's probably taking Jimmy's job.
Yeah. Logan James asked a great question. What is your opinion of the PWI top 10 best women wrestling? Logan, I don't give a fuck about the PWI top 10. Look, I'm not trying to shit on your question. I thought that was a funny way to answer it, but I legitimately like PWI. It's like a kayfabe list. It's like getting a toy with your Happy Meal at McDonald's. Like nobody, I don't know.
My kid got a McDonald's, like a miniature McDonald's croc, like a croc shoe today.
Dude,
it's big.
Yeah. I have to take my daughter this weekend to go buy Crocs because she got one in her Happy Meal. Yep. All the kids at school are wearing Crocs now. I used to make fun of people who wore Crocs. Like I said very mean things to people who wear Crocs. So JD is one of them. Well, now I have to eat my own words because now my kid wears Crocs and I have to love people who wear Crocs.
I am Crocs. that's What were we talking about? What was the question?
I don't know.
I mean, that's not us, man. Like, we're not gonna put 1 ounce of thought into what pro wrestling culture is. I'm not 12 anymore. When I was 12, the PWI 500 was super important to me. But
it was a big deal. But I mean, like, in their PWI, it's so weird. The PWI 500 is like intergender, and then like now they have a 250 for just women.
Don't go there.
I know. So I think that's where, and I think last year Naito didn't even make the list. you know what I mean?
Champion. Jesus Christ. Yeah. This is why you can't take this thing seriously. Tetsuya Naito didn't make the PWI 500. Think about
that. So I think the whole thing is just, it's pretty lame. But look, people that have fun doing that have fun. Like, I used to, when I was a kid, go to the grocery store with my mom. Mm-hmm. And I would just go over to the magazine section, and I'd pull up PWI, and I would read it, and I would read WOW magazine that Bill After had kind of broke off. And then I would get the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Almanac that had all, like, the historical records, and I would read all that. So, but now that I'm 41, I don't live my life in kayfabe anymore. So
no.
I don't really see any value in it.
I'm happy with this kayfabe that we're the kayfabe of the smart work is what we do.
All right. Let's see. You think they are straightening out their booking before the new TV deal starts and every show will be canon with each other. I think they're just trying to refocus things. Mm-hmm. I don't think this has anything to do with their TV deals. If anything, they were going to do it before they actually sign and get everything back together. But in fact, they've been in a steep decline and got the deal anyway. So I don't really think the TV deal has anything to do with the fact that they're improving things. I think that they just saw that things were not working out and they decided to go in a new direction.
I think the TV deal gave Tony Khan some pause, right? Yeah. I think the pressure is off him now. And now I think he feels like he doesn't have to scramble to do a show anymore. I think they were so worried about, it's like when you're spinning plates, right? Like, you got to worry about the one plate and then you got to go to the other plate and then you got to run the other plate. You got to make sure all those plates are spinning at once. And I think now that the plates have fallen off and broken, you can just worry about the one, you know, and just really focus on the one plate. So I think that there's more focus because they don't have to worry about ratings anymore, because they really don't. Because once they put the show on Max, once they live stream the show to Max, then those ratings don't mean shit.
Yeah, Dave Meltzer said that they would still mean shit because that's where the bulk of their money's coming from, and that's, they still have to make them happy. But it's not going to be as a big a deal as it once was.
I know we can say that, but I mean, in reality, by simulcasting the show on Max, you are cutting off your nose. So you don't cut off your nose despite your face. So you don't really give a shit what your face looks like. Like, I know they can say that, and the bulk of the money comes from this and whatever, but I mean, if they're going to live stream the show at the same time, simulcast the show, it's going to go down. I'm never going to watch that stupid TBS app again. I fucking hate that thing.
Yeah, me too. I actually canceled Paramount Plus. Thankfully, at the same time, my daughter told me that Paw Patrol is for toddlers and she doesn't like it anymore. I was like, thank God.
It's a hard moment when your kid starts leaving behind things. And you're like,
I know.
I was a little sad to lose Paw Patrol. We're keeping Paramount Plus until Frasier, the new Frasier season is done. We're big Frasier fans over here.
Yeah, I wanted to keep it because the new season of Dexter's coming on, and like, I was gonna watch that, but
I never watched Dexter.
I loved Dexter. It got me through my first deployment, and then they came out with the new season a couple years ago. And now they're doing like an origin story, so I'm all in on Dexter again. But I can find other ways to get that. So
I know you can.
Yeah. I'm not that worried about it. But I have canceled Paramount Plus. And I'm going to put those resources towards getting HBO Max back, because my wife's cousin canceled her subscription like a jerk right before she asked to borrow my truck. She borrowed it and then canceled it. I was like, what the hell?
What the fuck? Yeah. I felt that way about my brother's Netflix subscription, which he canceled it right as my son wanted to start watching One Piece. If you know what One Piece is, God help you.
Yeah, no, I thankfully we haven't bridged that one yet. So
that's anime. I don't think you're gonna have that experience.
No, my daughter, like, on Netflix, she likes Gabby's Dollhouse. That's like her deal.
So. We're watching anime now. It's a show with 1,000 episodes, Mike.
Yeah. hold on, just one more. Let's see. Everything Pro Wrestling. I was disappointed by people crapping on this Dynamite. Like, 1 week, people want long-term booking. I think this Dynamite wasn't the most exciting thing. It was them setting the table for what's about to come.
That's exactly what it was.
It's episode one. So, but I think everybody wanted, you know, probably five-star matches and a bunch of different angles when really, you know, they're just setting the direction going forward.
This is reality. What anyone posts on Twitter isn't real. And you can't take the temperature of anybody because you ask 10 people, they think you're going to get 9 different answers, right? You're lucky if two people agree. So, like, and that's the problem with AEW's fan base is they don't know who to serve all the time. Because there's some people that just want 5-star matches. There's some people that want, like, old-school booking. There's some people that want sports entertainment. And for too long, they've been trying to serve all of those fans instead of really just creating AEW fans and figuring out what AEW fans like and like saying, this is what we are. You know, I think for too long, they've been too focused on trying to be all things to all people and be the three ring circus. Well, there's another company that does that and they do it better than you. So just be you.
Yeah. So next topic I wanted to get into because I think it was a Fightful Select reported earlier this week that Jonathan Gresham, his contract with TNA is coming up due. We already know that Josh Alexander's contract is coming up due, I think, in February or March timeframe. Jordynne Grace is looking like she's going to be leaving TNA, very possibly in January. And I think we all know that she's being earmarked for WWE. I think it's only a matter of time before she's in WWE. People think that Joe Hendry is going to be there before too long, but I think Joe Hendry is probably going to be around until the end of next year, to be honest with you. So I think he'll probably be there through the end of 2025 or towards the end of 2025. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But there was a lot of dooming again among a lot of people who don't really watch TNA. So it happens like 2 or 3 times a year because contracts will come up due and then like, oh, well, how is TNA ever going to financially recover from this? You know, like earlier this year, Scott D'Amore got fired and then they lost the Motor City Machine Guns. And then subsequently, they ended up having some of the best houses that they've ever done, the best pay-per-views they've ever done. Now it looks like very possibly, Jordynne Grace, I'm going to go ahead and say she's out. I'm going to go ahead and put very possible Jonathan Gresham and Josh Alexander are out. Very possible. I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying it's possible. So what I want everybody to do is to relax. We don't like, even if they do leave, people leave this company every 6 months. This roster refreshes all the time. Most of their deals are very short-term deals anyway, by design, because they're constantly refreshing it. That's just what they do. Oh, hold on. I've had the wrong thing up this whole time. That's just what they do. So I guess my question to JD is, do you think that, say, Jonathan Gresham does leave, and I think it's a very real possibility because I don't think he's really contributed a lot to TNA to begin with.
Surprisingly.
They just don't know what to do with him, which is weird because Delirious is on the creative team. And you think if anybody out there that could do something with Jonathan Gresham, it would be the guy that made him the world champion, right?
Did you watch those Ring of Honor shows?
I didn't watch the weekly shows, but I watched their bigger shows, and I was always really impressed by Jonathan Gresham as the champ. He didn't win the championship like the very end, but I liked the foundation. I thought that was a cool character. I thought that was a cool group. And I liked when he won the title. I loved that match. That was really cool.
Yeah, matches. I mean, you weren't watching the weekly TV was really bad. That's the thing about old Ring of Honor's TV really was bad. For a good chunk of Ring of Honor's existence, their TV show was not good. It was not week-to-week storytelling. It was not typical America. It was just good matches. So that's why, like, I crapped on Delirious on our old show specifically many, many times as a booker. Yeah. Now here's the thing, like you were talking about before, I'm gonna address this first. TNA fans, are you ever that line in the Avengers, right, where Bruce Banner says that's the key to being the Hulk, because he's always angry? TNA fans live in a constant state of chaos and they're used to it. Like, you can always tell the people who don't follow TNA, because the other ones are like, oh man, things are getting bad. TNA fans are like, oh, whatever, it's what we do. Yeah. You know, they don't care. They're remarkably loyal. They're going to watch whoever's on the show. They're going to be 20 people you've never heard of in TNA next year, and they're still going to watch the show. So it's fine. What was the question about Jonathan Gresham? Where do I think he's going to go? Or do I think what now?
Do we think the AEW will take him back after
that? No, I don't. I don't.
You don't think so? Because I felt like he did a pretty good job of getting out there in the media and kind of taking ownership of what happened. And then going so far as to say, look, I've actually sought out therapy. I've apologized. I'm trying to move forward, trying to be a better guy, all this and that. As far as I know, he hasn't had any incidents in TNA. Just TNA just didn't know what to do with the guy because he's very much just like a good match guy.
I think he's hard to program because like he's small and he doesn't have a ton of personality. True. And his matches are very grapple based. And like sometimes that doesn't work well on TV wrestling. Pay-per-view wrestling, pretty good. But like week-to-week TV wrestling, trickier. I think Jonathan Gresham is a very hard guy to program in an American television company. And I think he's got a better chance of following his wife, to be quite frank. I think we have a better chance of seeing Jonathan Gresham in NXT.
I could see that. If I'm Tony Khan, do I bring him into Ring of Honor? I wouldn't be against it, but because I do think he's a really good talent, and I think that he would just do fine there.
I think so too. I think he's gonna have people advocating for him. I think Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt are gonna be like, hey man, I think we should give Gresham another chance. I think they're going to say that without, I think he will have plenty of people advocating for him. And Tony is a nice guy to an extent, but that guy really burned some, I mean, I don't know if he burned some bridges, but he said some interesting things. And like, at the same time, if you bring him in and you don't push him, like, I don't know. I don't, is the juice worth the squeeze?
I can say he's done just fine in TNA without being pushed. Cause he doesn't do shit. He hardly wins, but
yeah. But in TNA, he didn't have a meltdown.
That's true. Well, hey guys, I've been stalling enough. Our guy is here, Ibu of Wrestle Purists. Welcome to the show, Ibu. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, guys. I always try to fit some time for Mike and JD when I'm asked, and I literally just got home a couple minutes ago. Was racing home from work, and I'm glad you guys are still on. I was listening in the last like 2 minutes there, so I came in on some good conversation about Gresham and TNA. But I'm happy to hang out here. I'm going to try to stick around for a little bit, and I'm cool with wherever this thing goes, man. I was just listening in on the Gresham talk, and it took me back immediately because I don't know if you guys know this. I spoke to John live on air like 2 days before he quit AEW. Or quit Ring of Honor, or whatever he was officially signed to, right?
Yeah.
But in that live interview conversation I had with John, it was very clear that this wasn't going to be a long partnership. Because I'm talking to him and I'm asking him various questions, like, "Hey, like, have you been getting any instruction behind the scenes? And like, what's the direction of your character? And how is what you do going to fit in this setting? And have you had conversations with Tony Khan? And is there an understanding about what he wants from you?" And a lot of what I was met with was exasperation and or a lack of clarity on his end about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I could tell it was coming from a place of confusion and frustration. And so you couple that with the fact that I remember that Ring of Honor show, it was Death Before Dishonor 2022, where he walks out there, boo-boo face.
Oh, open. My God.
You know what I mean? Clearly wasn't happy. They threw Nana on him where he found out that he was going to be paired with Nana like the day of. And he loses the match very unceremoniously. And we find out later that he pretty much, you know, quit and kind of went off on Tony Khan. Didn't surprise me just off the energy when I was talking to him a couple days earlier. I was like, this isn't a guy that like is feeling what's going on right now. And I tweeted about Jonathan couple days ago when the you know word came out that his deal is expiring. I actually asked people within TNA and I got a quick answer on when the expiration date is coming out. It's going to be in January 2025. And I tweeted this. I think Jonathan is really, really talented. I thought in the pandemic he was one of the best wrestlers in America.
Me too.
And the funny thing about it, JD, is I watched that pandemic ROH TV. And it was one of those funny things where I got a real kick out of like Jonathan Gresham in the Pure tournament, but it was in that way where I'm like, this is for nobody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
like,
agree 100%.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like I can't see this appealing to like a lot of people, but I kind of dig it. But I tweeted that basically, I don't think any wrestling company has really gotten him since the dissolution of the Sinclair Ring of Honor. And it's kind of unfortunate, you know, like I thought TNA would be a good landing spot for him. And that hasn't really kind of materialized. I don't really know what to say about this run.
No, but, he, It hasn't really been a good run. He did get a world title shot at one point with Alex Shelley, and that match was awesome. But it was, again, like you said, Ibu, it was for nobody. It was, you know
hard,
what I mean?
That was hard to kill, right? Hard to kill 2022, right?
No, so he wrestled Saban before he had actually come and signed on. He wrestled Saban in between runs, but he actually it was a TV match that he wrestled Shelley on while Shelley was the champion. They did that, and then he took off for a little bit, and he came back, and he was wearing a mask, and he was doing a great Muda gimmick, but instead of spitting the ink, he was coughing the ink, like the mist, onto his hands and rubbing it onto people, and then turns into an infectious disease. It was weird. Jimmy Jacobs then ends up going to AEW, so I don't know.
And then didn't Kushida cook up like some concoction to like neutralize this virus that Gresham was spreading onto people?
To his credit, Kushida, JD, you're gonna like this. To his credit, Kushida then flew to Japan and met with some of the top scientists and got an antidote to Jonathan Gresham's ink, brought it back, and then that's how he lost his magical powers. And the next thing you know, he takes the fucking mask off and he's just back wrestling as Jonathan Gresham again.
You know, people gave me shit for not wanting to do Brace for Impact anymore. And every time you talk about something, it just verifies and validates my feelings that I can't watch this shit. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see the dread overcoming you, you know?
Yeah, it's brutal. But then, like, he did all that, and then he gets rid of the mask and he comes back, and then he has like a badass match with Charlie Dempsey, which was excellent. He actually ends up having a really good match with Kushida. And I think just recently he had another really good match with I can't remember off the top of my head, but he's had some good matches. But that's the problem with Gresham, is like, how do you program him into a storyline? It's a very difficult thing to do, which is why I was curious if Tony Khan would even be willing to bring the guy back.
Well, you guys kind of touched on it there in the sense that it would require a level of creative dedication and effort that I don't think he's willing to attribute to Jonathan, because I think the world of him. And if I was running my own promotion, I'd feature him in something notable. But if you're Tony Khan and you have, you know, look at what's on his plate when it comes to like the people he needs to prioritize and focus on. Mm-hmm. And it's like a man telling him right now in a creative meeting, all right, dude, so I think we need to come up with a really extensive game plan for Jonathan Gresham. He would tell you to go fuck yourself. Yeah. So it's you know, yeah. The funny thing about it is, to me, you know, I'm of the mindset that Jonathan Gresham in my promotion would be the guy that you accentuate what he is good at. You allow him to talk about things he believes in. And so when he was the foundation in Ring of Honor, he had the whole thing of like, and this sport has been overrun by things that are just antithetical to the essence of the sport. Him and Jay Lethal would talk about how, you know, Ring of Honor is overrun by violence and anarchy and this and that, and how we would restore the purity of wrestling, you know. And Jonathan Gresham very much believes in all those things. He's a believer of just wrestling done the old way and adhering to the rules and so on and so forth. Even the little things, whether it's punches and rope breaks, that's why he was so great with the Pure title. So I say all this to say, you would have a guy like that essentially being the pariah, the guy who kind of is like the guy shouting at the clouds, so to speak, and you draw the contrast. It's just, I don't know what promotion exists right now in America, or any notable one, or anyone with a TV deal where you could kind of plug him in and make that important, which is, again, that's why I say, like, TNA, you would have thought like that would have been the company. You would have thought that's the spot where he could kind of stand out and do that whole thing, you know. And there was even, I remember he did like a couple sit down interviews on the show where he kind of like expressed these views and stuff, and like that didn't really lead to anything from what I saw. And that's when he went in a sports entertainment direction, and that wasn't great. So I don't know. I'll tell you this. I suggested to somebody who would get the word out to Jonathan that why doesn't he try Mexico? You know, because in my view, I think with his Yave background, he would be tremendous in CMLL.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
The other match that I could remember off the top of my head was that he had that was in TNA that was really good was actually Laredo Kid. They actually had a really good match recently. So.
See, that checks out. You know what I mean? Like, of course, that's going to be a really good match.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's going to do. And the other thing, I saw people, dude, I saw WWE fans tweeting like, "Hey man, is he good?" And I could tell what the line of thinking was, because they were going to try to psych themselves up for a WWE Jonathan Gresham run. And in my head, I'm like, dude, don't. You don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, you really don't want that. Don't. That's, like, he's way too short. He doesn't, like, he'd be swimming upstream over there the entire time. It's just, it would be a bad marriage from the start.
The only thing I think of is he goes over with Jordan and he does some player coach stuff in NXT.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he's actually currently with it. This is weird, JD. You'll get a kick out of this. Jonathan Gresham is actually booking Memphis right now. And he's booking Memphis and he's in a feud with Jay Lethal. I'm actually going to want to check that out, because I thought their matches in Ring of Honor were pretty good. So I think I want to check out what Jonathan Gresham's booking in Memphis with Jay Lethal.
Just had a 1986 flashback when you were saying that. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Ibu, I had another topic that I wanted to discuss, but I, you know, somebody just dropped a super chat here.
Ooh.
So I'm going to go ahead and lay this on you.
I'll say this immediately. Appreciate the support in the live chat. And I mean, while I'm here, if you guys want to ask me questions, feel free to just ask them or send super chats or whatever. You know what I mean?
I'm actually curious about this one, because I've heard something too about this topic, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it. JD, I think you already know the answer to this.
I do know the answer to this, yes.
Yeah. Has Ibu heard anything about Kevin Owens re-signing with WWE? I know the answer to this, but I'm curious to hear what Ibu has to say.
That's interesting. I've spoken with people within WWE throughout the last week or two about a number of things. Nobody could give me a straight answer on Kevin, but I have my own personal assumption. And that assumption is that he's staying. The fact of the matter is, I'll put it to you this way. There's only one fork in the road that would halt his re-signing, but it's not a big enough fork to make him turn down what's going to be likely a $5 million a year contract. The money going around in wrestling right now is insane. And he was already on a great deal. That's getting up. He's probably going to make around $5 million a year. And this, I'd anticipate, is maybe his second to last wrestling contract of his career. So it's all about, you know what I mean, securing the family's future. And he's one of the great utility players in the business right now. So
I'd imagine. Ibu, I think you're right on that one. I have a pretty good feeling. I'm not going to report it because I don't report shit, but I have a pretty good feeling.
Oh, you're in a lucky position. He is staying. Dude, isn't it so great to hear things and not have to have the burden of, like, your name attached to it on an aggregation, and then, like, dipshits on the quotes just being like, "Who the fuck does Mike Gilbert know? Who the fuck is Mike Gilbert?" You know.
Oh, we have heard that on this occasion. I have heard that. So.
Yeah, because there. So I did have like a couple of stories, but I don't know what I'm doing. I just talk shit on a podcast, and like it did get aggregated, and I had so many people attacking me, like, "You don't know what the fuck you're talking," and it turned out like, I can't remember what the story. It was like a very minor story, but you'll find out if you keep breaking TNA scoops. Those guys are vicious sometimes, man. They come after me.
That's insane, and it's just funny because, like, you read what people say, and they'll be like, "These fucking journalists." I'm like, dude, I just have a microphone, man. I'm not.
Yeah. I've never taken a journalism class in my life. I'm not ever going to.
I'm not Adam Schefter, bro. Like, I'm not. You know.
That is funny, because I do, because I've been doing some like blogs on our Patreon, just kind of like fun stuff for like our audience. And I do some aggregation stuff on there. And the top three people that I'm actually aggregating from, as far as news goes, it's Dave Meltzer, Sean Ross Sapp, and it's Ibu, man. And you've really carved a niche out for yourself with what you're doing. You've worked really hard. You've cultivated some really good sources. And the stories and the stuff that you come out with then often gets like double stamped and triple stamped by Dave and by Sean. So you're kind of like right up there with them, man. So that's kudos to you.
I appreciate that. And it's funny because I never asked for this. You know, I don't think anybody wakes up and they're like, "Man, I want to be a wrestling scoopster." And like, there are a lot of people that play wrestling scoopster and they like the feeling of it in the cloud. But I actually genuinely don't. I always like to say on like my shows is I'm just a guy that people in the business happen to speak to. And it's not like a primary source of income or anything like that. But it is cool that, you know, to get the cosigns or the corroborations from like the people that like actually leading the top of this this field. And I think the reason why I've been able to do that, and I tweeted this as a, to be honest, as a transparent word of advice for other people trying to engage in this, is the key is, it's not that hard, to be honest with you guys, to like find one to two. Once you get to a certain level, it's not hard to find one to two guys that'll talk to you and tell you things, right? But the key is, you know, you'll get those guys who will break a story. They'll just run in, they'll run into something, it'll break a story, and you're like, holy shit, maybe this guy, this new guy I never heard of, is legit. But then what'll happen is, you know, they'll, their page or their following will grow so fast from that, right? And they like the feeling of that. And they start, you then become the guy that guesses sometimes when people ask you things. And a lot of those guys, they flame out very fast because, hey man, what's going to happen with this? And like, they'll make an educated guess, even though they didn't actually double check or do the due diligence or double source or triple source their things. And that's usually how those guys flame out. Well, I'm not afraid personally. I do this on my shows a lot. People ask me in the super chat, hey Ibu, what does WWE think about this? And I'll be like, I don't fucking know. I have no issue telling people I don't know tons of things, you know, and that's okay. Nobody knows everything, you know. No one has all the answers.
Well, that helps your credibility, is the fact that you aren't afraid to say I have no idea, right? Yes. You're not taking this thing super seriously, because so many of these wannabe journalist guys, wannabe scoopster guys, take this shit so seriously, live or die on every scoop. And I like that you kind of keep yourself grounded, even though you have done an amazing job building a following in a pretty short amount of time. So kudos to you on that. And like,
I appreciate it. I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah. Hey, before I get to my next question, I just got
to
tell you a quick story.
Talk
so
to
I'm
you.
I'm listening to your Raw review, guys. He does a really good Raw review. What I like about it is they don't really review Raw.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah. So I
don't review Raw on the Raw review.
Yeah, yeah. They do a whole Raw review and they barely talk about Raw, which I think is great. I love that gimmick. Yeah, I don't know.
What a gig. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, so everybody go check out the Wrestle Purist YouTube channel. I think it's a must subscribe. They do great work over there, but I'm listening to it. And I'm driving here in Hawaii and I'm coming through the gate. So I live on a military base. Mm-hmm. Now you got dudes like armed as you're coming in. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have to roll down your window and you have to like show them your ID. Well, right. I'm driving through. And there's this big redneck at the gate with an M4 machine gun, right? An M4 rifle. And I roll down my window, and all of a sudden, one of you guys starts making fun of Pecker Woods. And like the guy just looks at me and was like, what the fuck? And I was just like, and I'm like trying not to laugh my ass off, because I'll be honest, I have not heard the term Pecker Woods since I left high school football.
Do you remember what I said? We all would just
make fun of each other because. You know, back in the 90s in locker rooms, you would say racist shit to each other all the time. That's just kind of how we were. And I got you guys almost getting me in trouble coming through the gate with Peckerwood jokes.
Do you remember what I said in response to that? I was like, can we say this on YouTube? I was like, can this be said on YouTube?
Yeah. I almost died laughing. Like after I got through the gate, I was like, I can't believe they're talking about Peckerwoods on Russell Pierce. I thought that was pretty funny. But
a lot of like outdated, unused white slurs are just like preposterous. Like honky, you know, it's like
honky, yeah.
Yeah. Imagine like getting into a fight with a guy in traffic and you're like, shut the fuck up, you honky. It's like, what? All right, I guess.
I've always been a fan of Cracker myself. Cracker. That was made me laugh.
Yeah. And Antonio Bryant is bringing back Cracker. He's Cracker of the Day on his Twitter page.
He does.
All right. I do have an actual question for you. I know people here want AEW talk. That's what they come for. But with Jimmy Jacobs gone, what does AEW need to do to get their creative into the next gear?
To be honest with you, they need to be on the same page. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I feel like AEW right now creatively is comprised of a couple different islands. You know, you have like this universe and that universe and that universe. And like, there's nothing wrong with variety on a wrestling show. I like having different things and changing the pace up. But broadly, when you're doing like the type of angle that like this Moxie angle is, and it's so encompassing, whether you want to or not, you have to have it inform what you're doing on your section of the show. Because if not, if that top angle that's supposed to like kind of spark plug your company right now, if that doesn't succeed, nobody wins anyway. So you can't be selfish and be like, well, that's this guy's, that's this producer's shit. I'm worried about my shit. No, it has to inform your stuff in some way. I'll give you guys a little bit of a mini scoop here.
Hold on, mini scoop. I do have a button for things like this. Hold on.
Cool.
Breaking news.
Sorry, I had to show off the new button. Go ahead.
Should recreate that thing. It says Brace for Impact still.
Oh, that was awesome. There were talent at TV that had planned pre-tapes that were stressing what I was stressing throughout this morning on Twitter, which is essentially, hey, this has to affect what we have in some way. So we should like rewrite this or change this so to reflect that. And that's like pretty vague terms, but I hope you guys get what I mean by that. Like, because here's the thing. Even if you're not directly fighting with Jon Moxley, if Jon Moxley is targeting your whole company, then he's coming for you at some point. And at the end of the day, he is terrorizing your place of business, your place of work. And that should affect you or make you mad, or you should have some type of feeling on that. You know, there should be some type of response, some type of acknowledgement verbally. So getting the creative on track, it's just everyone has to buy in, everyone has to lock in. And this John thing really has to be nailed. If this thing fucking sucks the way that like the Elite Takeover did like a couple months ago, that's another setback, to be completely honest with you. That's the thing with taking a big swing. When you take a big swing like that, if it doesn't land, like you also hurt yourself too, I think.
100%.
So that has to land, and you have to take the necessary measures to make it land, which means that it has to inform other parts of the show. There has to be this overarching bleak sense of just unease across the show. And the way I explained it on Twitter was basically AEW, the promotion, is going to run Dynamite business as usual. However, in spite of the show being presented as normal, there should be this weird tension going around like the locker room when like the talent are being spoken to by Renee or Katie Aura or whoever the talking head is. There has to be the feeling of unease that like maybe this match is going to get interrupted, and the baby faces should always be seen almost strategizing or having a backup plan to make sure that doesn't happen. I also wrote that right now the premise is basically the faces are fighting on behalf of the soul of AEW, and Jon Moxley's trying to remake the promotion that he finds unrecognizable. That's totally fine. That's a good premise. The thing is, by week 5, 6, 7, unless you develop that and develop the individuals within it, it's going to get tedious and boring. You know what I mean? Like the individuals have to have some distinguishing factors within this conflict that separate them. Because otherwise, it's like, what's the difference between Darius Martin to Andretti or one of the Private Party guys? You know, they're all just gonna be faceless, a jobber adjacent dudes getting their asses kicked by Marina Shafir and Claudio Castagnoli, and in every good war movie or war story, right? To make you care when half of these characters fucking die at the end of the movie, they establish interpersonal dynamics and create little mini plots within the people, so that they're more fleshed out. You know what I'm saying? So that has to be nailed, and that's just for the John stuff. That's beyond like all the basic criticism stuff that we've been saying for the longest time, like being consistent with people's follow-ups, consistent with pushes, and just broadly having a plan. If you adhere to a plan and set out to it, it makes your creative much, much easier. But if the shows come off like they've been changing direction week to week to week, like it really felt like during the Wrestle Dream build, then you're gonna run into the same issues.
I agree 100% from a storytelling perspective. Like we talked about how this BCC storyline is has some NWO vibes to it. Just like you talked about, like when you watch those WCWs from 96, when the NWO first came in, it was like a dark cloud that hung over the show, right? And it did permeate all the storylines. And they did, like you said, like it went from what's next, like what are these guys doing, to the story evolved, well, who's going to join them? And then it became like, okay, well, what's Sting going to do? And for the first year of that storyline, it progressed and it moved and they allowed it to change and grow, and it kept viewers interested. The problem is after year one, it shit the bed and they didn't know what to do with it. So I agree with you 100%. Like this has to be the overarching storyline of the company right now, and everything has to reflect and kind of revolve around it. Like Jon Moxley is the sun at this point, and everything's got to move around him in some way, shape, or form. And to ignore it is literally to put it in a different planet right now.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is just, again, because the reason why I say it has to inform other parts of the show is if you don't have that, it's going to just trivialize the conflict, because if other major characters don't give a shit about what John's doing, then it's like any other wrestling storyline. Then it's just, that's the guy that comes out for his segment to fight the guys he's fighting. And what is that? How does that make that stand out any more from any other angle? You know, and so it has to affect everybody, at least in some respect. It doesn't have to be overtly. I'm not saying that at the start of Dynamite, every single character needs to be abandoned on the stage. You know what I mean? Like running out there to fight. Like, no, you don't got to do that. You know, but like it should just affect the show. Like the show should feel affected by it and changed by it.
Mike talked earlier about how it bothered him that Will Ospreay didn't say anything last week about this particular storyline. So I think Mike is right. Like, all Ospreay has to do is pay mind of it, and maybe he wants to do something, but then he runs, like, the Callus people do something to him to keep him away from it. Like, at least it's addressed and it helps progress the main storyline, your A story, forward in some respect. So I think I've kind of come around to your way of thinking, Mike, that it needs to be addressed with him somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the top babyface in the company now that Danielson's gone. He should at least acknowledge that Moxley is running around. So he should be like, as soon as they get done with this Callus fuck and Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher, I'm coming for John Moxley and that World Heavyweight Championship. You know, like, he has his primary feud, but he should still have his eye on Moxley because especially he's talking on the company.
Especially since Will is like Mr. like AEW. Yeah. You know, and he's super rah-rah, like waving the banner.
Yeah. Hey, we just got another super chat. I don't know why this person wants to know this from you, but this is Brainbuster. It says, "Hey Ibu, thoughts on Yokozuna from versus Savage from 1994?"
Brainbuster rules. He super chats on our shows, and
okay.
What I like about Brainbuster is he breaks up the monotony of like really like dull, like annoying questions I'll get on like my show sometimes. Like, people like, "Hey Ibu, like, what are your thoughts on, like, I don't know, just like something like really, hey, do you have an update on Garcia's contract?" And I'll be like, "Well, yeah, the update is that there is no update," you know. And then like you'll get like that a bunch, and then like Brainbuster will pop in and be like, "So who do you think was a better top guy in All Japan, like Tenryu or like Jumbo?" And I'm like, "Oh man, I thought, you know, I kind of prefer Tenryu, but Jumbo was like the guy," and da-da-da. You know, so I do like Brainbuster. Yeah. The match you mentioned here, Yokozuna and Randy Savage, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I vaguely remember it being like one of I vaguely remember it being very good and Savage's last strong WWF match, and like notably better than his WrestleMania 10 match against, I think it was Crush.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It was a no holds barred match. Our last false count anywhere match.
Yeah.
And Randy Savage hung him upside down or something like that, and then randomly.
Right. That was okay, but like I remember this Yokozuna match being really, really dope.
I remember always thinking of Savage and Yokozuna because they were the last two people in the 93 Royal Rumble, and right. Savage hits the elbow from off the top and then tries to pin Yokozuna in a Royal Rumble. And then it's cool because Yoko flips him off, but it's like, why did Savage, like, Savage has been in how many of these things and he just forgets the rules all of a sudden? That always bothered me.
What a beast.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you tweeted earlier this week that you think, you didn't say this exact word, so I want to tell everybody that I'm paraphrasing here. I didn't actually go back and pull up the tweet, but you kind of said that you think that there's going to be a Josh Alexander bidding war next year.
Yes.
What did you mean by that? And do you have any insight on what's going to happen with him?
Yeah. So Josh Alexander, his deal is up next year.
Yeah.
And, it was not his decision to stay this additional year in TNA this year. TNA exercised their right to hold him for the option year.
Yeah, an option year, yeah.
Yeah, he very much was, prior to the exercising of that, he very much was looking forward to seeing what was out there. And it wasn't like it wasn't a situation like, man, fuck TNA. I hate this place. I got to get out of here. And I want to go to this place specifically. It wasn't even that. It was just a case of, based on how I understood it from the people I spoke to, it was a case of just Josh wanted to just know what the market was for him financially. He wanted to know what type of money was out there for him, and was just looking to see what that type of offer was going to be. And so we follow this up now for 2025. And I spoke to people in wrestling just about TNA in general, and the feeling within the industry is that the departures of Jordan Grace and Josh Alexander specifically are all but guaranteed. And that TNA was vaguely aware of this, and that they were already kind of like looking to just divert those assets financially in other spots, and that they accepted because those are two of the better paid people on the roster. And so that's just the feeling based on, again, these are the sourcing on this, these are like officials within the industry. And just and what tends to happen is everybody knows everybody's business, hilariously. So that's kind of just the word on them. And beyond that, I was outright told from somebody within NXT that they think he's a tremendous wrestler. So I just get the sense that when his deal is up, people will be looking at him and looking to offer him a deal. AEW officials will be at the Maple Leaf Pro Show, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was some mingling taking place there.
You know, we've talked about Josh Alexander a lot on the show because we'd started out as a TNA podcast, and we've kind of pivoted. I do have my TNA podcast every Saturday on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Got to get my plug in, of course. But we've been basically of the opinion that it was going to be a tough market for Josh because he's a little bit older now.
Yeah.
But he's got the neck issues. He just had he'd come off another really a major injury last year. Mm-hmm. And while he is an amazing wrestler, I happen to think he's got a lot of charisma and has a great promo. I don't know that he has big room charisma, to be honest with you. So I think that was going to hurt him. So I was kind of wondering whether or not there would actually be a market for him. But as a big Josh Alexander fan, I'm glad to hear somebody say that there actually is going to be a little bit of a market for him.
At least a little bit. It's funny. I think about Josh and like where he would land. And I feel like his WWE ceiling would be like, I think that I don't know where their relationship lies at this point, but I think Ethan Page and him in a North reunion would have upside as a main roster tag team that 100%. Was a heel unit that you could throw against the Cody Rhodes and whoever as the other baby face, like Randy Orton and Cody versus like Ethan Page and Josh Alexander would main event like house shows for a month and be the SmackDown main event on any given week, for example. They're the type of team I think like you did win a bunch of tag belts, and they're the type of top level tag team like I said, you would throw them at like two upper level pushed baby faces. I think that would be like a good landing spot for him. I don't see him getting like a high end singles push on the main roster. AEW, it's just the overstuffed roster, and that's kind of what makes things a little tricky there. He's somebody that had he gone to AEW in 2020, 2021, he would have done really well. And now I don't know how well he would do, and I don't know how much interest there would be from them. But again, like I said, he has the opportunity to mingle with some of those guys this weekend. He's also a guy that I think would fit really well in Japan, but the problem with Japan right now is there's just not that much money in Japanese wrestling.
And there's not. He's taking on Takeshita this weekend.
Yes, he is. Maple Leaf Pro.
Which should be pretty fucking awesome. All right, I only got a little bit for you, and I'll let you get out of here. I know you don't got a whole lot of time, so thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, almost 1 year later, what do you think of CM Punk's WWE run so far?
That's interesting. It's funny. I thought the opening few weeks were like Twilight Zone shit. Like, it was really fucking weird. Yeah. It was just very, very jarring. Nothing about it felt like correct. You know, he comes into the new setting, and it was hard to really like believe what was happening, you know. I feel like he didn't get his feet wet, and like they didn't really fully marry what he was to what they were doing, if that makes any sense. And so it was just kind of like uncanny is the best way to describe it. You know, he's doing the stuff with Shawn Michaels on the NXT show, and he's cutting the promos with the weird haircut and calling, you know, WWE his home. It was just very weird and very jarring. Yeah. And I thought it started to get going in the Royal Rumble build when he starts to interact with like guys like Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. But there was this weird looming sense of like, can Punk still get it done in the ring? And it kind of like colored things for me personally. And I remember at the Rumble, he didn't look good. And like even before the injury, I didn't think he looked good. And so when the injury happened, it was like, man, what the, like, what's going on here? And it's like, you'd think it's a disaster, but I do think it was a blessing in disguise, because I thought that CM Punk's WWE run actually got going once he had his arm in a sling. And the real big turnaround, he cut the promo about the injury and he's talking about his friend with cancer and how he doesn't know if he will ever main event WrestleMania, if that's ever meant to be. And that was the first like time he cut a promo in WWE in the return, where I felt like I was actually like watching him being sincere and like believing it, you know? Yeah. And then from there, that's when you started getting into stuff where Drew McIntyre is trolling him and fucking with him, and he's responding back. And then they had that segment in Chicago. It was the same show that The Rock showed up, like Bloody Cody Rhodes. They had a very like loosely scripted promo segment where it was him and Drew McIntyre talking shit and Seth comes out. And that felt like CM Punk, because he's just like really ornery and like not in a good mood. And he's like referencing Vince McMahon and he's fucking with Drew McIntyre. And it felt like a real CM Punk segment. And that was great. And so the preceding couple months where they're finding a way to kind of keep him in the mix despite being injured and he's doing the back and forth stuff with Drew, I thought that stuff was generally like from like the spring, early summer, was really good. And then the build leading into Drew McIntyre, like the first SummerSlam match, was very, like, really, really exciting. Their first SummerSlam match is obviously super polarizing. I thought the second one in Berlin was a very good match, but also like closer to what I want, but not quite getting there. And then we get the high note here, which was the Hell in a Cell match, that I thought was excellent. I thought that was one of the best WWE matches in a long time.
And yeah, so me too.
It's hard to summarize overall, like, because it's been so much, like, up and down. But what I would say is that, generally speaking, the trend was upwards. Like, the Drew McIntyre feud threatened to, like, lose steam at points, like, towards that last quarter. But you ended on, like, such a high note where you have a Hell in a Cell match that was not only excellent, but also felt like a proper Hell in a Cell match, which you haven't gotten one of those in a long time. So I thought he went on hiatus on one of the best matches he's had in a couple of years. And coming out of this, he's set to come back and likely work Gunther, which will be another great match. So I would say that Punk and that's going there. What's up?
I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's a story that you kind of broke a week or two ago. You said that it's Gunther versus CM Punk at Survivor Series, right?
Yeah, so that was floating around as an idea, and that was kind of thrown out there. And Punk's super into that, and he wants to do that match. And as of right now, that looks to be the scheduled match for Survivor Series. Yeah.
Okay. And then if you're just watching the TV, you would think that they're going to get to Rollins and CM Punk at WrestleMania next year, right? I mean, that has to be the direction.
Yeah, probably. And the thing with Gunther was coming out of Berlin, Punk cut a promo where he basically was saying, like, all right, I'm done with Drew. I beat him. And Gunther, I'm coming for you. And that's when Drew like jumps him and like you set up the third match. So they kind of threaded that in a little bit. But yeah, it looks like what I would anticipate is he's going to face Gunther. He's probably going to lose. And he's going to have basically like an approximation of the Collision run following that, which is basically like have fun with tags and working with other people for a couple, like for a little bit into the Rumble. And then you start looking towards Seth Rollins.
Well, I think that's good. And I think they're finally going to get to the Rollins match. I think that's a match that everybody's going to want to see. Yeah. Not going to main event a damn thing, but it'll be a big match for them.
Which he won't love, you know. The thing that sucks about aggregation is like, you ever like are inclined to like give a little something to the audience, but you're like, nah, then it's gonna get like aggregated, and then it turns into like another thing, you know? Like I was gonna say something, but it's not worth it. But yeah, he wants to do big time, big business shit.
Yeah,
you know, and so he looks at guys that he can really draw money with, you know. So that's why, like, for him, he genuinely looks at Roman Reigns, and he really wants to do that. Purely just because of like how box office he believes that will be. So we'll see when that happens. We'll see if that happens. But Mania looks like Rollins, and I'm not sure if that's going to main event any night, but we'll see.
No, I think the main event, double, like night one main event, probably Roman versus Big Jacob Fatu would be my pick anyway. And the night two would be Rock and Cody. But there's a rumor going around that it's going to be Rock, Cody, and Roman in a menage a trois.
I don't put too much stock in that, to be honest with you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't put too much stock in that.
That's good. That's good. Hey, before I let you go, since you don't want to get aggregated, I'm going to try to trap you into some clickbait. You want to play?
Sure.
All right. You're starting your own wrestling company. Okay. And you can only pick one of two females who happen to be free agents. Okay. One of two females. The two females are Mercedes Moné and Mariah May. Which one are you picking to start your new company?
My mental health. I don't know. I don't love you. I mean, look, you got to give it to Mercedes just because of
okay,
her track record. You avoided
the clickbait.
Yeah, sure. if you gave me like Willow or something or like EO, I'd take them right now. But even with this lackluster year that Mercedes is having, I do still think she is Mercedes and she's capable of being Mercedes. And in a funny way, ironically, since we were just talking about CM Punk and how the beginning of that run like was really like shaky and like, eventually he kind of got on the right foot, I do think the same will happen for Mercedes, even though it's been a bit of a weird start and a couple of her pay-per-view matches were very disappointing. I still like to think there's enough signs there to believe that we're going to circle back to this in 5 months and say, yeah, she's really like getting going now. And I don't mean that from like a business moving standpoint. Like, I think that maybe like we're past that because of like how it was handled upon arrival, but just from the standpoint of like her producing great high-end work that is befitting of someone of her caliber and her reputation, I do think she'll be able to get back to that.
I do too. I would say it's been a bit disappointing, but I did feel that the women carried All In, the build to All In, just it just didn't happen to where that her match with Britt Baker was able to deliver. And I think that Mercedes Moné plays up to her competition. Like, when her opponent is really good, she's really good too. You see that when she's in there with Willow and folks like that. But when she's in there with somebody that's like Britt Baker, who I don't want to say is like terrible or anything, but she's, you know, she's not like a five-star type of worker. She's not going to do all that. So Mercedes Moné is only as good as her opponent is.
The weird thing is, I thought she in WWE, I thought she was someone who could like have good matches with outright bad wrestlers. I remember she had a match with Carmella in the pandemic. I think it was TLC 2020, where it was like outrageously good. Given like it was like no disrespect to Carmella, but just like with Britt Baker, it's like she's not that type of wrestler, and they had a very good match. And so I think if there's one thing I learned in this AEW run is, she no longer has the ability to do that, where you just throw someone at her who's just like, all right, and like they're gonna like make chicken salad out of chicken shit. She can't really do that, but I do think she's somebody that can still have a very good match with a very good wrestler. It kind of reminds me of how Dave Meltzer used to talk about Ric Flair and how Ric Flair would describe himself, because Ric Flair was the type of guy that in 1989 he could work a broomstick. In 99, he's not what he once was. If you give him a good wrestler, well, not 99, WCW sucked in 99, but like, let's go like 96, right?
Yeah.
Ric Flair could have a very good match with a very good wrestler. You know, you give him Eddie Guerrero, he's going to have a very good match. You're going to give him like another guy like that, he's going to have a very good match. But he's not the guy that like you throw anybody and it's going to be special. It's not going to be special. That type of magic isn't there, but they can still be great when they need to be great with the right person. And I do think Mercedes is in that type of situation right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I'm going to leave you with this. It's not a question, but it's a super chat. Sure. For AEW, I think they need to build their roster around MJF and Swerve. Those are their two biggest stars, in my opinion, bigger than Ospreay, Moxley, or Cole. I don't know that they're bigger stars. I think they're very good. entire company around them.
Moxley's done better business than both Swerve and MJF. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, and he's actively driven to turn the ship around both in kayfabe and reality. And so I just trust the creative mindset of Jon Moxley and the state he's in right now. And then also it's like, well, a guy like Will Ospreay is just undeniable, dude. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you look at him and just like outright say like, yeah, no, we're going to cap his potential at this level because he can't be at that level. It's like, why not? Like, you know what I mean? So I say the more the merrier, share the wealth, and let's have all those guys be at the top rather than just, it's designated to Swerve and Max. I think all those guys can coexist at the top of the card, and with the right creative, they can all benefit from that and help AEW.
Yeah. And AEW does a good job of like rotating people. Like they sent Moxley to Japan for a while right? Yeah. While they were focusing in on Swerve. And then when Swerve's run was done, he takes off a little bit of time, and then Moxley comes back, and then now MJF's back. There's a lot of the pie that people can eat, so I don't really feel like we need to downgrade others to make other people look good. I think we can say, look, they're all pretty fucking good. But if you're asking for my money, Moxley has probably been their most reliable star. And MJF was a box office failure, unfortunately, that the whole that run just didn't quite work out. So I would say if I had to pick between Moxley and MJF, I'm going to go with the guy that's probably done a little bit better business for me. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but totally... go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's totally fair. I'd also like to shout out like Hangman Page. I mean,
yeah,
the turnaround he's made with his character like this summer was tremendous. And I hope they keep the momentum up with that. I think they're threatening to kind of like cool that down a bit. And I hope not, because where he was just in the summertime, and going into like All Out Chicago, you're looking at one of the best characters in wrestling. And so I hope they kind of keep the ball rolling on that. And I think Hangman Page could be somebody that can really help them.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I. Ibu, man, I really appreciate you being here. You gave me more than 30 minutes that you promised me. So thank you so much for staying longer. You're always welcome here on the Mike and JD show. So thank you so much. And thank you for all the hard work that you're putting in, because guys like JD and I, who don't really break news, we just, you know, talk about the news that you break. That's a big help to our podcast.
We appreciate it.
Listen, I'm happy to provide that for you guys, and I appreciate you guys. You guys are like way too nice to me, but I'm down to come on anytime if I'm able to, and I had fun here. So of course I'm going to extend it a little past the time, because I was having a good time.
Yeah. Everybody go follow Ibu. If you're not already a follower, go to @backuphangman and then go to the Wrestle Purist YouTube channel. You just Google or search in Wrestle Purist. And you guys got like 3 or 4 shows a week on there now, right?
Yeah. And with me specifically, I do the Monday Wrestle Purist Worldwide show where we talk about the weekend stuff. And that's usually where you'll likely get like just like all around the world, you know, information and coverage. I do the Raw review on Tuesdays where I don't review Raw, but I answer a lot of super chat questions and give a lot of information and laugh with my friends. And then we do Dynamite reviews on Thursday. So listen, subscribe to the channel. And you'll usually catch me on the channel twice a week. So definitely do that if you're someone in the audience that's unfamiliar. And if you don't follow me on Twitter, follow me @BackupHangman. Please don't harass me. And I usually do a space a week where, we just fuck around and have fun. So, guys, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, man.
Thank you to the audience for being so kind. So appreciate all you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate you. And that's going to do it for us this week. And until next time. Mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game. Better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.